Welcome to another episode of Autosave. I'm Camille Salazar-Hadaway, and here with me is my co-host, Nick Andrade. Hey, Nick.
Hey, it's nice outside, so I want to enjoy the weather. No, I'm just kidding. I want to be in here with you talking about our favorite game, Final Fantasy VII. It is our favorite game. I don't care what you say. And we're going to talk about it, and we're going to love it.
We are going to love it. It seems like you're trying to convince everybody, but we'll get to that later. On this episode of Autosave, like Nick said, we're going to continue our deep dive into Final Fantasy VII Remake. Now, where the story left off last time, well, it was a nice bonding experience with Cloud and Aerith as they showed us their potential romance blossoming. I'm trying to change my voice to romantic. Tifa was kidnapped on purpose, but it's okay because Cloud and Aerith had lots of time together and they actually realized that Tifa was going to be a potential bride for Don Cornero. Now, this was an interesting turn of events because Cloud really let down his barrier of, you know, just being brooding all the time. And he got a hand massage. He did his dance on. He dressed up as a woman. And even after all of that, it ends up with Tifa and Aerith in the sewers.
All right, you got me. I could never say no to a sexy girl. Since Avalanche blew up two reactors, Shinra's decided they ought to stamp them out, home base and all. And I mean stamp out. By targeting the support pillar and blowing it up.
The pillar?
Did I stutter? The plate will come crashing down.
Don Corneo grosses me out so much.
He does.
And it's really messed up. It's a messed up turn of events, but Shinra is planning something big and Corneo isn't lying. At this point in the game, after Chapter 9, I think all bets are pretty much off the table. And, you know, the way we think of this game, I think it may be a little bit different, and we may have to expect the unexpected. So in this episode, we're going to tackle Chapters 10 to 11, and our theme today is More Than Meets the Eye. That's as good as that is going to get.
I like it.
Can you do it better? Can you do your Transformers impression a little better than mine?
Transformers, More Than Meets the Eye.
Now, that's really bad. I don't know what accent that was.
But you went all in, and that's all that matters. You really did go all in. So I'm going to give you brownie points there. But, you know, we're going to take a look at strange things that are happening that might make it seem that the main characters are not who they seem to be. And who could I be talking about? Well, it's a very broad question, and we'll get to that more later. But when it comes to characters that they aren't as they seem, well, maybe they have secrets. They may have even, you know, amnesia. They may forget about what happened in the past, which is why they seem different than who they actually are. And when you think of characters, Nick, who do you think of?
Yeah, I tried to think hard about this one because, I mean, we've seen Cloud with all his memories that he keeps having and his weird grunts that he mm-hmm. keeps doing. Trying to think well, there's one part of the story where we don't know where that's going, but there are some other characters too that I feel like maybe hiding certain things that we'll dive into. But I try to think of in terms of what are some movies out there where characters don't really know what's happening, or maybe they're hiding something. And the first thing I thought of was Memento.
Oh, yes.
From Christopher Nolan, where Guy Pierce's character actually he has amnesia and he has memory loss. So he has no idea what's going on. Someone murdered his wife and he tries to piece it together. And then he finds out things. Maybe that he shouldn't. I'm not going to spoil that movie in this show, but that's one character. And then I also thought of Unbreakable. This was a really good one that Bruce Willis, he didn't know that he was a quote unquote superhero in the movie. And then he kind of slowly finds that out as the movie goes. But he's just a regular Joe. So these are kind of like little things where either a character doesn't know what's happening to them, or they know something and they're choosing not to say anything.
You know, actually, now that you mentioned Bruce Willis, I will actually say Sixth Sense.
Ooh, okay, yeah.
That's another, I guess Bruce Willis really doesn't know who he is.
It's true.
You know, he finds out that he's actually dead. Spoiler, sorry, if you haven't seen the movie, it's been way too long. You should have watched the movie. Another one that I think of is actually video games, God of War, son.
Good call.
If you've played the recent one, you find out that he's someone else. And then that takes me into thinking Marvel, Loki, actually, when he poses as Odin for the longest time, Odin, you know, you think it's Odin, but he's not who he says he is. So yeah, there's a lot of moments where you could see characters. Born Identity is another one where he suffers from amnesia. Captain Marvel, another Marvel reference. Brie Larson as Carol Danvers. She remembers who she is after she finds out her identity as a Kree warrior and all that stuff. And you could even say maybe even Bucky Barnes in Captain America, the Winter Soldier. I think that's a really obvious choice too. There's so many characters out there, and we're going to explore why it's so interesting, these characters, when they're going through these moments, specifically with Final Fantasy VII Remake. But first, before we get into some gameplay, we want to mention that we are on Patreon. That's patreon.com/autosavepod. So join today if you'd like to support the show. After the break, we will dive into Chapter 10 of Final Fantasy VII Remake on autosave.
Tifa?
Cloud. We have to get back to the slums right now.
Yeah.
I didn't want to drag Aerith into all this.
She'll understand.
How do you two know each other?
I saved her. She saved me. Round and round it goes.
And that's all there is to it. Sure there isn't something else going on?
Just like we kicked off last time, where Cloud fell a long way down to somewhere new, he does it again, this time with Tifa and Aerith, as they end up in the sewer system. Now, first off, we could choose, because, you know, when you fall, you actually see Aerith and Tifa lying there, and you could choose who to wake up first. So, Nick, I have to ask,
yep.
Tifa or Aerith?
When I thought about this, I thought maybe we picked the same person. I picked Tifa. Obviously, as Cloud, I'm like, let me talk to Tifa first to see if she's okay, because I don't want to be with Aerith. I want to be with Tifa. So I woke her up first. What about you?
We did choose the same person.
You did?
Woke up Tifa because I mentioned this before. I really do believe in their romance. That's not really there. Like, I want them to be an item. And even though Aerith and like that blossoming romance from Chapter 9, I could see it now. I still am fully set on Tifa and Cloud ending up together. So I chose Tifa. And I was like, oh, Tifa does not. She just like got knocked out on the floor. And the first thing she does when she wakes up is, so what's up with you and Aerith? Like, are you like, who is she? How'd you guys know? Like 21 questions. I loved every moment of that. Are you a thing? What's going on? I didn't want to drag an Aerith. Of course you didn't, because you didn't want Aerith to be around.
I had to go back. if you picked Aerith, it's not much. Tifa does still say, hey, like, what are you doing? But again, it triggers like, this is actually important. I didn't know that. Where it has a certain effect on something later in the game.
Yes, because it makes it look like it doesn't. So it'll be interesting how that plays out. But now that you know that there's going to be a decision here that you have to make and it will affect what happens in the game, I'm still happy with my decision regardless. So there's not much, you know, really time after Cloud picks up Aerith or Tifa, whoever you choose, to contemplate, because we get straight into a box fight with Abzu, and it's pretty much like an upright behemoth. Here we're going to see weaknesses to fire, you know, how much Nick loves his magic. So I'm pretty sure he did well in this fight.
I had fire handy on me, some magic sometimes, and it's a simple fight. If you have Ifrit, it makes it pretty straightforward.
Yeah, it's an easy fight. To me, it was like, okay, the action or the excitement that I felt from Chapter 9, because we jump straight into a fight, it's continuing that. So like, this is going to move really quickly. But after that, our goal is to actually use the tunnels to end up back to Sector 7 and to make sure, or to figure out if what Corneo is saying is true about Shinra planning to bomb Sector 7, and make sure if it is true that it doesn't happen. So We have to find our way through these underground sewers, fighting off a bunch of enemies, turn water levels up and down to maneuver in different areas. And you got to make sure to check like every crevice to find chests, because you never know what you're going to find, what material you're going to find there. And as we're going through, the gang keeps thinking about what might happen to Sector 7.
Damn it. I can't stop thinking about what Corneo said.
I know. Me too.
It's gotta be a trick. There's no way they'd go that far. But what if Corneo really was telling the truth? We have to get there in time to stop it. We have to.
Right.
Aerith, what are you not telling me?
Huh?
Guys, come on. We gotta keep moving.
Coming! I'll go first.
So it looks like Aerith knows more than what she's leading on to know. And it's interesting that Tifa's really poking at her, trying to get some sort of response from her. Because this is now the second or third time when Aerith has been asked a question. And you get that sense that she's hiding something.
Right.
Right? So how did you feel with this moment? Like, what are you thinking? Because personally, I think that this kind of goes to what I was saying last time about Aerith knowing more than what's happening, maybe leading into some of the theories I thought about last time. What are you thinking, Nick?
It's interesting with Aerith because with Cloud, I feel like, especially with all those memories, you're thinking there's something with Sephiroth, there's something going on. It seems like a little bit more clear. But with Aerith, it seems like I don't really know where this is going. So this is where I'm more interested in Aerith's story, because I feel like she knows certain things about, again, like the past or the present or the future.
Future, yeah. Something with the future, because she's saying that the future is not set in stone, right? So
no, yeah.
And she says that like she's trying to change, like maybe she knows her future. Like, this is where I'm thinking maybe she knows her future is not so, you know, happy in the end.
Right.
And maybe she's trying to live out her life so that future doesn't happen.
So do you think it's premonition? Or do you think she's seen the future?
See, that's what, I don't know if she's seen the future, because like, I want to think that she's probably as brooding in some sense as Cloud, because she does show signs of that where she's just like, and she kind of like daydreams off. So maybe it is a premonition. Maybe she's getting visions too, but we're just not seeing that perspective of it. But I do feel like she knows a lot more how this whole Final Fantasy VII story goes. Like, she's kind of like a fan that's played the game. She knows how it ends, but because she's in the story, she's trying to stop things from happening. Because even when Tifa's worried about Sector 7 dropping, she's still not sure if Corneo is like lying or not. Aerith never says like, oh, you know, he's lying. Like, Cloud's trying to make Tifa feel better. But Aerith never goes to that point where she's just like, no, that's not going to happen. He wouldn't, right? She's more just like, don't worry, it'll be fine. That's why I'm just a little suspicious of Aerith.
You know what you're reminding me of? And again, the listener can't see us, but we're actually on a call. And I see how she's being animated, Gabriel. And it looks like, you know, when someone's trying to solve a murder mystery and they have the red string that's connecting all their suspects. That's basically what you look like right now. You have a lot of theories here.
I do.
My main thing is that I think that she, not that she has like, she can tell the future, but that she's lived multiple past lives. That's my guess. And that she knows certain things from maybe certain, again, we've talked about this whole multiverse kind of situation here, that maybe she's lived so many different memories and she kind of knows these people already. It's a different story, but at the same time she kind of knows where maybe some of these things are headed. I don't know, it's interesting. Again, I think this is more interesting than Cloud's story, because I feel like Cloud's story is something we can find out.
You don't think so? No, I think they're both interesting because I think they're linked.
Oh,
like how Cloud was seeing that other Cloud, maybe Aerith sees other Aeriths,
right?
And they talk to each other. I have no idea what's going on, but I love the fact that I'm just thinking of all these theories. And yes, I actually am looking at a board right now with all the red string leading to all these different theories that I have. So you're right on the money there, Nick, with that. Now, at this point, we got to turn on an old timey generator. Like
our favorite.
With all the tech that's in Midgar, yeah. Why is everything like just like looks like it's been rusted to the bone? This part here, you got to grab the skeleton key to make it work. You got to turn it on, fight some Sahagins along the way, and find a way from Sector 6 to Sector 7. How are you finding this point?
It's a lot of like you have to like switch a dial to make sure the water level goes down and then bring this water mm-hmm. level up. Again, these are actual sewers. I didn't mind it though because I never felt lost. Mm-hmm. Even when I was going back and like getting treasures, which I always check every crevice to make sure that I have everything. But I never felt like this didn't drag on. I felt it dragged on more in the previous missions where we had to implant the bomb and in Sector 5.
Yes.
So this to me felt...
And going through like the tunnels there, yeah.
Yeah, that seemed more drawn out. This one seemed more straightforward where I didn't feel... And there was a lot of enemies to fight. So I felt like I was getting a lot of XP and feeling good about it. And it happened pretty fast. So I didn't really like... It wasn't a big deal for me. I don't know. What about you?
Yeah, I thought it was okay. I just kind of was bummed that we were leaving, you know, Chapter 9.
Yeah.
So I was hoping that... it would keep up the action and the suspense. Like
it didn't.
But it didn't. No. It kind of falls a little bit after that boss battle. And then when you're walking through the maze, there are a lot of enemies that keep you interested. And, you know, there's a little fun little part here because you have the wastewater pumps, like you mentioned, Nick. And you have to use the left analog stick and hit X as many times to expand the red area on the switch.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And you got to make sure the needle hits the right spot and you're off to the races. For me, these mini games really test my patience. 100%. I don't know what it is about my reaction time to things or like if it's just maybe the animations, the cues in the game. I don't know what it is, but I'm not that great at these little mini games. So it was challenging.
It's always these ones. I don't have a lot of problems with other ones, but I guess with water, I had the same problem in Miles Morales where we had to fix a switch that had a water level and we had to make sure we got it on time.
Yes.
It's similar here. And again, I got to start reading instructions because I don't read the instructions properly. It literally tells you what to do and I have to then go on YouTube because I don't read the instructions and be like, oh, that's how it works.
Yeah. You want someone else to tell you what to do other than the game.
Because I don't
want to
read.
Yeah. you don't want to read. And you don't want, yeah, it is a lot of reading. And I feel like we're kind of doing the same thing here with our audience. We're telling them how the game goes. So let me continue. At this point, you fight some creatures. And this will actually trigger a cutscene of the three of you warding off a lot of creatures. And that's kind of it for Chapter 10. Basically, just a giant maze. Some water puzzles, and then that's it. No big plot points along the way. It just sets it up for what's next.
It's deserted and kind of creepy. People don't come around here often. Not just because of the monsters, but because of the stories. What kind? Everyone seems to think that the train graveyard is haunted. Those who lose their way out there in the dark of night will never, ever find their way back home again.
Is that right?
I mean, it's not like I think it's true or anything. But, you know, it's just...
Then let's hurry.
I feel like in that moment, Tifa was like, it's not like I'm a kid who thinks, like, ghost stories are true or anything like that, Cloud. Yeah. Like, still like me. I'm cool.
She has to, you know, still have some sort of coolness for Cloud so that she can date him eventually, I guess. I have no idea. But you know what I wanted to mention? After the success that was Chapter 9, I felt like the energy level just really, really bottomed out here, right?
Chapter 9 was colorful. We had so much fun. Cloud was out of his shell. And then, you know, you get into this chapter here, which pretty much is awkward for Cloud, who knows, you know, how Tifa feels about him and how he feels about Aerith. So it's a weird, it's kind of like Three is Company, really, what's happening here with this one.
Come and knock on my door.
Come and knock on my door.
I'll be waiting for you, Tifa will.
No, we're not going there. We're not going there.
Sorry, okay.
My mom, like, sat me through too many of those shows.
Okay, I'm sorry.
But anyways, Yeah, it's a very awkward moment, I think, for Cloud. So we actually see him, you know, he was out and more animated and stuff in Chapter 9, but we don't see that here because he's like, oh, this is weird. I'm going back to being brooding. I don't want to talk too much. So it was just a weird up and down. And I think that's for Chapter 10, why it was harder for me to feel like I wanted to move forward. But I think the feeling of hoping to get that level of excitement from Chapter 9 pushed me through.
I think you bring up a good point there with Cloud. He just reverts to the character that we saw before. So all this growth is all of a sudden gone almost.
Yeah.
Again, is it because he's with these two women that he potentially likes? So he's trying to act like, yeah, whatever, I don't care. I'm not really sure if that's the reason. But again, the level, it just changes completely. Where now Cloud is like, I'm not really scared of ghosts. Like, whatever. Like, I don't like them that much, but you go find, like, I don't know. It's just, come on, man. Like, we grew with Cloud. So now we're trying to.
We saw you dance.
Yeah.
For goodness sake. You could stop being broody and put up a show. You know, we're all friends here. Just tell us what you're really thinking. And maybe it's the fact that he's in a graveyard. He's feeling so down. Because like Tifa mentioned, they're in the train graveyard. And it's a junkyard for decommissioned train carriages. And the group needs to pass a large facility to reach Sector 7. This place just is full of creeps. It's deserted. There's like things that you, it like just gives you like a vibe like someone's watching you and they can't go back, which is the other thing. It's like you can't go back to where you came from because you got to move forward. So they put on their big boys and girls pants and they move forward. And Tifa tells us about, you know, people getting lost in this graveyard and never returning home again.
They never return.
And then we also hear some kids laughing. And that's kind of where I checked out and was like, nope. So I paused the game. I was like, not today. I was like, not doing this right now. Yeah. I'm not doing this right now. That when I heard like anything that is like kind of creepy, they're trying to set it up to be haunted. You introduce kids. That's my out. No, show me the door.
I instantly think of Freddy Krueger and 1, 2, Freddy's coming for you. So I think of that, but like children laughing, it's like, oh, hell no. And I know this isn't a scary game, so I'm not anticipating there to be much jump scares, but I thought there was going to be one. And if you get me with a jump scare, I'm not going to be happy, Square Enix, which I guess didn't really happen, but I don't know. This whole scene, even especially like, I didn't remember this from the original game. And I had to go back and see like, oh, this actually is part of it.
Yeah, it is.
There is actually a level that is the train graveyard. And I went forward with it. But again, like I wasn't feeling it. And I felt it was a little corny. Even after seeing Cloud, you know, dress up as a woman and dance, I was just like, I'm kind of checked out on this one.
Yeah. After I booted up the PlayStation again, I was like, I gave myself a break and I was like, okay, I'll just go into this. Because yeah, like you, I didn't remember this in the original. And then I was like, oh, it does happen. So it can't be too scary. So then I hopped back in. And, you know, we're actually met right before that. We actually get a cutscene from Turksrud and Reno. And they're in a helicopter talking about what they're about to do. And this has to do with the plate, linking back to what Corneo was saying, how Shinra is planning to drop the plate. And you could see both of them are actually not bad guys. They're just kind of doing what they're told. Well, I don't want to say they're not bad guys because I feel like just doing what you're told doesn't mean you're not a bad guy, but it just means that you have more of a conscious that than what we would have originally thought. They're giving some thought into this. And Reno is just like saying, you know, it's kind of too late to grow that conscious. They've done bad stuff before, so they kind of have to go through with it. But you see them having this dilemma, which I thought it was interesting to see that.
I just always think in terms of like, if I'm working for some evil corporation, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think I'm a good person, but I'm doing their bidding. Am I a bad person? Or am I complicit? Am I doing things that I shouldn't be doing, even though maybe they're morally wrong, but I'm doing it for money's sake? Does that make me a bad person? I would say it does. What do you think?
I think it depends. Like if you say you're someone from the slums, you kind of need a way out. You're trying to feed your family. You're kind of dealt the wrong cards, you may actually do things that you don't want to do. And yes, that can make you to be a bad person. But the initial thought there was you're just trying to get into a place where you could survive. You know, you're just doing it for survival. It makes things more complicated. Being bad isn't black and white. But maybe, you know, committing a genocide and killing, dropping a plate on a bunch of people probably would make you a bad guy.
Or in this case, they have a helicopter shooting at people. So that might be very morally wrong. Even, I don't know. You feel bad of what you're doing, but you're also shooting machine guns at people. And then you're saying, oh man, whatever.
Yeah. But you know what, Nick? We aren't here to judge.
No.
We're just here to enjoy the game. And, you know, as we go forward, we actually see some weird hieroglyphics on the door that say, come on. Now, this is because it's like, it kind of reminds me of graffiti, but it's lit up.
Yeah, it's really cool.
Like, you know, how you would see, like, if you discover hieroglyphics in, say, Uncharted or, you know, any other game, Tomb Raider.
Yeah.
You see it glow like that. So it gives this idea that it's always there, but it just looks really cool and reminds me of graffiti.
You weren't thinking that this was a ghost rave? Because that's what I thought.
Oh, you were like
some glow sticks, maybe some ghosts. We're going to start doing some disco moves.
That's your old chapter 9 thoughts coming in. That would be a really good follow-up for chapter 9.
It looked like straight out of like a 2011 rave is basically what these hieroglyphic things look like.
Well, I didn't go to raves, okay, Nick? Those are illegal.
What? Anyways. I'm talking about watching them in shows. I've never been to one of those raves either, okay? I'm pure at heart, okay? I don't go... Sorry, not that people that go there aren't pure at heart.
I love that Nick is now like, oh my God, what did Camille corner me into?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Nick.
Thanks a lot.
But both Tifa and Aerith hold on to Cloud on each arm. One on each arm. Ooh. I mean, if this doesn't scream love triangle, I don't know what does. And I guess I could understand why maybe Cloud is so quiet, because this is pretty awkward. And, you know, things start to get weird here as well. We actually start to see ghost kids, not just like a regular ghoul. Ghost kids. That's what the giggling is. It's kids that are ghosts and ghouling. And this was another moment where I'm like, maybe I'll take another break. So I did take another break here. I'm not going to lie.
Camille, it's not that bad. They're just crying children that are, you know, translucent. That's all.
So if I was like, hey, Nick, look behind you. There's a crying kid that's translucent right now. You're going to be like, oh, hey, what up, kid? Come on.
I wouldn't, but I'm playing a video game. So I know that I'm in a safe space. Unless it happens to us in real life, then I'm going to run the other way and just say, oh, hell no, I'm out of here.
Okay, fine. That's fair. Were you kind of thinking like you're out of here when the ghost kid turned into like a Halloween looking monster?
No.
This was a weird transformation because I knew that the ghost kids wouldn't be there. I was hoping they wouldn't be there forever, the translucent kids.
Right.
And you see them kind of transform into these Halloween monsters that kind of look like floating balls of like a sack of potatoes.
Well, it reminded me of like Kingdom Hearts.
Ah, yes.
Where they have in Halloween Town, where they're the Heartless are like that. But I don't know. It's this weird like JRPG thing that they do. It's like, well, these are spooky. Let's slap on a pumpkin on their like belly or something like that. Like they always love to do these kind of things where it's like super cliche, like, oh, this is scary. Okay, let's slap on a pumpkin. And
let's
then if
make
it's
it cute.
Christmas version, you know, let's slap on a Santa hat or something like that. But they want to make it cute, even though it's supposed to be scary.
Well, I was down for the cuteness because anything that's not scary, I'm down for. And at this moment, you find out that the ghosts aren't down for you because they actually knock a huge train cart
from
the roof on top of you, like try to knock it on top of you, which, you know, was like, what the hell? I thought we were having like a really nice moment here. It seemed like Aerith was connecting with this ghost child, sack of potato, Halloween monster guy. And they're like, nope, here's a cart. We're dropping on you.
Don't trust ghost kids. That's all I gotta say. Don't trust them kids. All right.
I'm into that. Now you have to get the power supply back on, and that's where you fight the ghoul, another boss fight. And a tip for this one, use cure against them. It works for undead enemies, which, you know, I feel like if you play JRPGs, you know that. So you got this match, no problem. And after this fight, a cutscene triggers.
That was fun. All this time, you were waiting for someone to come and play with you.
Huh. What are you talking about? Come on, let's get back to the crane.
So Aerith can understand these ghosts, apparently, and the ghoul was just waiting for someone to play with them. I don't know about that, but that's what Aerith believes. I don't know if she could feel like their energy, their aura, their feelings. Like, does she even understand them fully? Like, I have so many questions at this point. And right now, up to this point, it was kind of leading me to like, okay, maybe my earlier theories of Aerith being maybe a reincarnation or... not necessarily a reincarnation, but another version that like lived this life mm-hmm. before.
Yeah.
And more that maybe she is just getting these visions. She lives in this world. She has powers where she's just in tune with certain things that are happening in Midgard. And that also includes translucent kids that turn into potato sacks.
It's weird, too, that she knows what they're saying. It's not like she feels their energy where she thinks about something. It's literal dialogue where it's like, oh, I just wanted to play.
Yes.
So it's like, okay, how does she have this certain power? Is she a medium? Should she have her own show on TLC? should she start talking to the dead and loved ones? And I don't know. It's, again, I think her powers are beyond what I know that they are. So this is where I'm trying to think in the moment. I'm just like, okay, she definitely is a superior being than most people on this earth in Midgar or whatever the earth is called in this game is.
Yeah, and it got me thinking back to the original. Like, did she actually die, right? Like, you know, Easter eggs before is like, oh, you could actually revive Aerith in the original. You remember that? Like how people were talking about that. I feel like maybe the devs were like, we're going to play on that. And maybe she didn't die. Maybe she just got like elevated to another level. Again, crazy theories maybe coming from the girl angel with the tinfoil hat. Maybe she's an angel. Hey, I wouldn't put it past Final Fantasy or JRPG right now, to do. So you never know. You never know. But what we really get from this dialogue is the possibility that these kids may be trapped here and they can't leave, which makes things more interesting because that means that there's another layer of like evil happening in this graveyard rather than just giggling translucent kid. Now Tifa then sees a vision of Marlene, and this part is really interesting. She sees Barret's daughter, and she has a flashback to Marlene talking about the train graveyard and wondering when Barret will come home, and she's sad about it. And we see the translucent Marlene be sad about it as well. And then Tifa shrugs it off to Cloud. But it's clearly got her thinking and it has her distraught by this vision. So, Nick, what do you think the heck this is? What is going down here? Because there's so much mystery in this graveyard. And it does remind me of like you visiting, if you were to visit a haunted house in real life, like all these stories that you hear and maybe you experience something and you're reading into it. But do we think like, is Tifa actually seeing Marlene here?
I think it's sort of like not a hallucination, but once you enter this zone, there's probably something that kind of triggers these feelings where I don't think she sees Marlene there, but she's thinking about Marlene. And then because of the way that this train graveyard might have like some sort of aura going on or some sort of magic, that it is like making this perception a reality. And so like you see them as if they're already there. I don't know, because now it's happening to Tifa. So it's like, is Tifa, does she have something going on as well?
You're right, because now I never thought about...
Are we thinking about this
too much? No, I don't think we're thinking about it too much because you're right. I never thought that Tifa's experiencing the same thing as Aerith, but you are right. She is. She's able to talk to this kid when it seems like other people can't and hear what they're saying. So yeah, maybe this place is feeding off their memories and kind of making them have either visions or premonitions of something that's going to happen. It's really interesting. This is why you don't go into a graveyard. There's a lot of freaky things that happen that you can't explain. But this is a real eye-opener for Tifa because, like you said, she's distraught because you're getting a better understanding of how a war and, you know, if that plate is dropped, like how this really does affect the people near and dear to her. And even if Barret is trying to do the right thing, Marlene suffers at the end because of his time away from her. So what Avalanche is doing, they are making a great sacrifice, but then you have to beg the question of like, is their sacrifice worth it in the end? Now, this is when things get more interesting.
Got it. Yeah, yeah, of course I do. We can drop the damn thing whenever. Except that.
Did you got a death wish or something? Because I sure as shit don't.
Dude, what's happening? Do you have a problem?
Not really. Small arm fire for some local boys trying to defend the pillar.
Well, would you feel about that? Send me your reinforcements. The more players that take the stake, the better.
So that's what we are, Carl.
Sounds like we're going to make the mission complete.
Tifa.
They're really going to drop the plate.
They won't if Barret and the others have anything to say about it.
All we can do now is keep moving.
Please. Please let us be in time.
Now it looks like Shinra are actually going to destroy Sector 7, as we see in the helicopters. I like to call them Team R&R.
Oh, that's good. I like it.
Are firing at some avalanche fighters who are trying to protect the pillar from being destroyed. Now, everyone knows now, Cloud, Tifa, and if Aerith didn't know, now she knows.
No, she knows.
I feel like she did know. I feel like she did know. She knew that this is actually a thing that they're trying to do. Now, we're trying to get out of the graveyard as fast as possible so that we could help with the efforts to make sure that this doesn't become a thing. And then we get haunted trains moving so that they could get out of our way. So it's interesting here because there's one thing at the end that ends up blocking us.
The kids that the Black Wing carries away have to live in the train graveyard forever and ever.
You're the one who...
Are you ready? We found you!
You got me. Hey, where's Aerith?
I'm ready! I'm ready! I said I'm ready! Come get me! I'm right here.
It gets emotional. Aerith gets sucked away by a black cloud vortex, and we see a hooded figure with a giant red light for an eye, and it looks like a machine, but she recognizes it as something.
She does.
She then has a vision about feeling lost and losing her mom. But Nick, what do you think is actually going on here? Because we know Aerith's mom is alive.
Yeah.
We've never seen this figure before, but she knows it. So what do you think is happening here?
I think she just feels lost. I think she feels alone, regardless if she has a mom. I think she feels, and again, this maybe comes back to us thinking that she has a certain power, obviously. And I think she is the only one with that power, I guess. So again, because she has these premonitions, whatever, I think she feels like she's alone, that regardless of, you know, her friends were trying to find her, but they couldn't. Like, what's that about? And then this machine guy who we end up fighting eventually. But it seems like she looks at it like she's like, I know who this is. Which again, does that mean that maybe some of these enemies or monsters are the dead coming back to life as something else? And she knows that it is? Again, we're thinking too much into this. But Aerith, to me, in this, like, she steals the show in these chapters because mm-hmm. I'm starting to really look at her as, you know, what really is her deal? I know in the original she dies at Sephiroth's hands, but in this one I feel like, again, there's something different going on with her. The original game, she just seems very surface level because of the dialogue, I guess. This one, you're really getting an emotional sense from her? I don't know.
This game is doing these chapters specifically, having you play as Aerith, you know, like it's doing a good job to make you more understand her as a character, give her more depth, which I like. And, you know, in terms of Cloud, it's pretty similar, like we mentioned before, where we know something's happening, but there's also information that's missing that we're not getting. Mm. It's just leaving that up for mystery, which is kind of frustrating at the same time because I want to be clued in. Like, we're already at chapter 11, and I feel like we should be clued in to some degree. But I think that also has to do with the fact that this is a part of a series of games rather than just this one game being the full story.
Which gets a little frustrating, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know. I know it's only one part of the game, but to have all these story parts is like, what eventually are they going to make it just one game together with like eight different parts? I don't know. I want to know more. That's all.
I just want to know what Aerith knows, whether it is about her past or about her future. I just need to know right now. And luckily for Aerith, Cloud and Tifa show up and they rescue her. And it was actually really great how that happened because, you know, she was having this cutscene of like being lost and then a friend finds her and it's not even Cloud, it's Tifa.
Yeah.
So I think the game is trying to build up a friendship between the two of them rather than them appearing as like rivals.
I like that too. Yeah.
Yeah. We also get a boss fight here. Not a small one. It's a pretty big boss fight.
It is. Yeah.
Elgor. I always get these
Elgor, I
names.
Think.
Elgor. Yeah. These Elgor, names are always weird. It's pretty much like a machine with one eye. It's the same one that Aerith saw before, which that's a pretty quick premonition. Cause usually if you think you're having a premonition or seeing something, it would be later down the road.
Oh, I know, right?
But it literally just happens after she yeah. saw, which proves that she kind of knows what's going on here.
Yes.
Like, she must have seen some of the steps that's happened before play out in her head or have visions of them as they're going through this and as Tifa questions her if we're now seeing the monster. Like, that's just the logic that I have. But this fight's pretty straightforward. How'd you find it?
Pretty easy. I think fire, again, is the main magic that you mm-hmm. can use to stagger it. And again, I'm at this point now where this felt like such of a filler kind of chapter, especially that I know what's going to happen. I'm just trying to get on to the next one as soon as possible.
All right. Well, and you know what, Nick? I'm with you. It's kind of like a filler. And with that, pretty much at the end of this boss fight, you just kind of go off to find your way into Sector 7 to help Avalanche fend off the Turks. And after the break, we'll actually give our final thoughts of Chapter 10 and 11 on autosave.
Let's go.
Right.
Right. It's that ghost.
So I have to ask, before we actually get into the gameplay here and our final thoughts and wrap things up, Nick, do you believe in ghosts? Because apparently we set a ghost free.
Yeah, I think we set all the ghosts free by doing this. I think Elgor might have been like the demon of the train graveyard that held all the souls captive, maybe. Maybe that's why Aerith knew who Elgor was. Do I believe in ghosts? Yes and no.
Oh.
Sometimes, like, I see these mediums on TV, and yes, I know that it could be fake, but sometimes I think, like, wow, like, that's got to be pretty accurate. And I've seen firsthand, like, some of these psychics, they get things right. I'm not just talking about TV, but, like, I've heard of stories where it's, like, it's interesting. Sometimes I think, like, yeah, maybe it might not be ghosts, but it could be souls. But do we even have a soul? This is a big topic that we could expand on more, but I don't know. So I'm going to say yes and no. It's almost like, do I believe that there's aliens? It's like yes and no.
Oh.
Because I'm like, I want to believe that there's other you know, life forms out there because there's other kind of Earths out there. So maybe there's ghosts. I feel like you're looking at me like I'm a weirdo, but what's your opinion on it?
I just love the fact that you're so uncertain about it. I am 100% in the belief that there are ghosts. I truly believe it. I've had encounters with things.
Oh, explain, please.
No, I don't, because it creeps me out and I'm in a new house now. I don't want to bring that energy here. But yeah, I've had instances that are very hard to explain happen to me.
Ooh, okay.
Things that I've seen happen to, like, not just me alone, like me with other people as well. Ooh. So I do believe in ghosts, and I feel like, hey, if you're there, do you. I'll do me. Just let's keep that separate. I don't want anything to do with you. And I do believe in aliens. I think aliens exist. So that's my little weird tidbits there. But yeah, I believe it. And obviously, Aerith believes it, as we saw in these chapters as yes. well. And we saw her release these kids from the grasp of this demon, which I feel like, because you said maybe this is the monster that was holding them, was the game not clear enough? Like, I feel like, for me, like, I don't know either. I feel like right here, if that's what this was supposed to be, the game was not clear about that at all.
Especially when they took the time to do so much filler like this, maybe just flush it out a little bit. Mm-hmm. Like, you've already led us on this trail for so long, just give us a couple more minutes of maybe explaining what's going on specifically, because there's a lot that you can dissect in this mission where you think, like, okay, maybe Aerith is this, maybe Aerith is that, maybe these kids are that. It doesn't really explain it. But yet, all of a sudden at the end, it sets the spirits free, I guess, with the glittery green lights, but it doesn't really explain anything. But again, like, we don't know about aliens or if there are ghosts. I think maybe that's just the whole kind of empty space of it, where we don't really know.
Like, you're not supposed to know for certain what happens.
Exactly.
I just think it was maybe poor writing. I think they were trying to go into... No, honestly, I feel like maybe it was they were trying to just go heavy on there's a lot of mystery within Aerith's character and what's happening with her and what's happening with Cloud. And we're trying to keep it very much like open-ended and like have people just keep assuming what's happening but not tell them the answers, that they just were like, oh, crap, we forgot, like, actually putting a bow on this chapter in terms of what happened to that kid.
I think it's because chapter 9 was so out there.
Mm-hmm.
And then as we go into chapter 12, we're not going to talk too much about it, but, you know, it gets a little heavy as well. So it's like they're trying to, I guess, maybe bridge the gap. So they're like, let's just throw in this to make it a little more calm and just get you through this so that we can get from one energy level to the next without feeling like it's just so much bombardment of, like, here's action, here's everything happening and dancing and fighting and killing and whatever. So it's like, let's just balance it out a little bit. But they didn't flush it out. They shouldn't have.
They should have. They really should. Now, a couple notes here about the gameplay. Now, in this, you could pick up feathered gloves in chapter 10 and get warding materia as well. Now, with that and, you know, the enemies that you face, Nick, were there any battles in here that you found very difficult, or were there any items that you were, like, really happy to get?
I've never really used the feathered gloves. There's a bunch of materia you can get, but nothing really stood out to me. None of the enemies were too difficult. The ghoul was, I guess, more difficult than Elagor because you had to dodge a lot. It spammed a lot of things your way that you had to dodge. But no challenging. There's a few missions in this game that are very, very challenging. I don't think this is one of them.
Okay. All right. I'm on board with those thoughts as well. I feel like this is pretty straightforward. It kind of reminded me of the earlier missions before. I feel like it was chapter 7 or maybe chapter 8 where we said it started to really pick up in terms of its pacing and difficulty. So I'm with you with that. It's given us a little break here. Now, back to our theme this week, which is more than meets the eye, a la Transformer style. And this time the theme was a little more subtle in the game than previously, than what we visited before.
I think so.
Yeah. It wasn't like actually so glaring like Cloud and his visions and, you know, not understanding. It had to more do with Aerith and, you know, her being a person and figuring out what she's hiding, or knowing that she is hiding something. And she clearly has demons, which maybe took a literal, maybe this is why this chapter was about the graveyard and uncovering Aerith's secrets, right? Because like those demons were representative by all the ghosts. But especially there's something there that's happening from her childhood that she's trying to hide from us or not let us visit. And she always tries to play it off as a positive way that she puts a spin on it. Now, it feels like she's trying to maybe even protect them, which is really interesting because usually when we think someone's hiding something, it's for their own gain. But Aerith makes you feel like it's actually for everyone else's gain.
She's definitely very pure of heart, whether it's obviously her bubbly attitude and her very high-pitched voice. But she's always trying to just reinforce positive energy for some of these characters. Like Tifa, when she's worried, you know, she says like, oh, don't worry, everything's good, there's whatever. Cloud, obviously, he has so many doubts about himself, especially of who he is. And Aerith again tries to comfort that and tell him, you know, he's more than that. But with Aerith, I don't know, it's she's slowly becoming, and I said this in previous episodes where I don't like her, and you know, I'm a big Tifa fanboy, but in these chapters specifically, I become more of a fan with her of her because there's so many different layers with her. And again, I really latch on to characters that are pure of heart, that will sacrifice themselves. And I feel like this is a situation where, again, she got murdered in the original, but not that she's okay with it, but she's almost at peace with herself.
Yeah.
And whatever happens to her, you know?
And that's if, you know, she actually knows what her future is, but it seems like she does kind of take Midgard for what it is, and she tries to really recognize the beautiful parts of everyone, even if they're quote unquote bad guys. Is there anything else that we missed of this chapter? I feel like we didn't.
I don't think so, but maybe Aerith is trying to tell us all in life, you know, just to spice up your life and don't get bogged down about the mundaneness of it or things that you can't control, because at the end of the day, everything will be all right.
Yes, I love that. That's a perfect way to end for this week's episode. Of course, you could follow us on Patreon, help support the show, reach us on Twitter. But as for next week, the haunting is finally over, but now it's time to kick it into high gear.
Attention, Avalon! You are surrounded! Stand down and surrender to public security immediately!
It's time to put it all on the line, next time on Autosave.
Come and knock at my door. I'll be waiting for you, Tifa.